Hey, everybody. Before we get into the show, we have a major, earth-shattering, massive announcement. Nikki?
Yes, it is that time again, Pete Wright. Our monthly planning membership is open for enrollment. GPS stands for Guided Planning Sessions, if you don't know already. We've worked really hard here at Take Control ADHD to provide you with a service that not only gives you ideas and strategies on how to plan your day and your week, but it also provides time and space for you to do the work and not just by yourself, but with others who understand and support you. We meet every Monday and Thursday, and there are three different sessions for each day that you're invited to attend. We are dedicated to making this membership to be one that is transformative in the way you think about planning and taking control of your time and schedule. There are so many benefits to the GPS membership, so please be sure to visit our website at takecontroladhd.com/GPS. Enrollment is open now through May 8th. Thank you for your time and attention, and I hope to see you soon.
On with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Taking Control, the ADHD podcast on True Story FM. I'm Pete Wright, and I'm here with Nikki Kinzer.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Pete Wright.
Oh, Nikki, we've got a show today.
Yes,
do you know what
do.
Our show is about today?
I really don't have any idea.
I know, because it was both a listener suggestion and the listener is also the guest.
Right.
So it's worlds collide today. I'm really, really excited. We're talking about positive and negative effect tolerance, and we have a fantastic guest to join us to do that. Before we do get into the good stuff, we have to head over to takecontroladhd.com to get to know us a little bit better. You can listen to the show right there on the website or subscribe to the mailing list, and we will send you an email each time a new episode is released. You can connect with us on Facebook or Instagram or Pinterest at takecontroladhd. But the really, really good stuff is over on Discord. Join the ADHD Discord community. It's super easy to jump into the general community chat channel, open to all. Just visit takecontroladhd.com/Discord. And you will be whisked over to the general invitation and log in. If you're looking for a little more, okay, this is the part we care about the most. If this show has ever touched you in a way that helps you relate to your ADHD in a new way, if you've been a longtime listener and you just don't know how to share the love, well, we've got some ideas. Head over to patreon.com/theADHDpodcast. Patreon is listener-supported podcasting. For us, a few bucks from a lot of you helps us to propel this show, keep it going, keep it thriving. And so we exist at the will of the patrons. So please consider this our weekly pledge drive. Jump over to patreon.com/theADHDpodcast. Get access to episodes early and get the bonus entertainment clutch at the beginning of every episode and the Q&A at the end of every episode that the general public doesn't get. It's just there's a lot of stuff. And of course, you get to listen live. So again, patreon.com/theADHDpodcast. You're the best. Thank you. And now on with the show. Dr. Dodge Ray is an integratively minded clinical and consulting psychologist in private practice at the Lotus Center, a holistic health center he co-founded in 2005 in Nashville. He was the co-host with yours truly of The Change Paradox, which was our shared pandemic podcast Fever Dream, which is still available on podcast players everywhere. And he is here to talk to us about positive and negative effect tolerance. Dr. Dodge, welcome back.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Are you? Because
I'm feeling a little overnamed. You know, like yours says Pete, Nikki says Nikki, and mine says Dodge Ray Psy D. That just seems like an overdressed sort of thing. I didn't know.
It is a little overdressed.
It suggested it, true. And so I said yes. What was I thinking?
you don't have to do what everybody says, Dodge. You could just be you. This is how this show started. This is how this episode came about, because you were listening to another episode and you sent us, I think the episode was our time shielding values calendar and schedule saboteur episode. And you responded to that with a post, and you said that in the clinical research community, there's a concept of positive effect tolerance that speaks to the upper limit of how good we're allowed to feel before we sabotage the feeling and bring it back down. I'll bet it applies here. That I think just that phrase alone, I found incredibly provocative. And so, as I usually do, I said, Dodge, why don't you come talk about it on the show? And you foolishly said yes.
Yeah. And here we are. You're never going to do that again.
I know. I love that, like, most of your guests have to do things like write multiple books and become world experts in the subject. And I can just post a, you know, a sentence or two. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, I have to talk about this like I know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Well, we're lucky that you do know what you're saying. So, yes. So just tell us a little bit about this concept and how we can break it down for ADHD.
So let me just say first, I say regularly to my son, Benjamin, hey, a great question will take you a lot further than a great answer, because it'll just lead to more and more great answers. And so let's make this one of those episodes where I'm not arriving having written a book about this. I'm arriving with some interesting questions, I think, about maybe another way to understand ADHD. And I think those are kind of cool. The different lenses we can bring to any topic we care about, like, help us sometimes see it from another angle or in another way. So affect tolerance in the clinical world is important because affect is feelings, right? And our tolerance for feelings matters a lot. Often we think about it around negative affect, like, can I stand to be angry before I just have to discharge that? Can I be anxious for a little while and stay there, or do I have to jump out of the situation? Can I be sad for a little while and grieve, or do I have to immediately distract myself, right?
Is it affect tolerance that also describes, like, sensory experience, like it's too loud or too bright or too?
That's a good question. I think of that as absolutely related, and I'll bet you there's some really interesting overlap that goes with that. Okay. That probably people who are more sensitive to, say, sound are going to also be more sensitive to all the sensations that go with feelings. And right. Mm-hmm. Feelings are fundamentally in the body. Like, we've got fancy words for them, but sadness is something across the world you'll feel, like, in your throat and in your heart, right? Fear, mm-hmm. You'll fear as a recoiling, and anger as, like, an expansion. Like, these, you know, feelings are in the body. And our tolerance for the sensations of our feelings has a lot to do with how we move through the world. And it was a whole lot of years ago that a, you know, a wise supervisor was talking about positive affect tolerance. And I was like, wait, slow down on that one again. And they were like, well, think about it. In the same way that we've got a floor to how much difficult, negative, downward feeling we're willing to tolerate before we interrupt it and jump to something else, we also have the same thing for the upper limit of how good we're allowed to feel before we do something about it. We can be just as, you know, mistrustful of our great feelings as we are of our difficult ones.
Sometimes more so, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because, you know, we're all a little ambivalent about everything, but I think the neurodivergent folks, as those, you know, those of us who really have both and brains more than either or brains, have the gifts and difficulties that go with that. I think we can be simultaneously craving of positive affect and also scared of it.
That's hand to glove, my experience, right? And that's, like, my career is based on wanting to do right sort of in a semi-public eye, and also terrified and imposter weighted by the shackles of imposter syndrome and purposelessness.
Right.
In search of purpose. Right. I mean, that's the head voice that's constantly questioning. So don't get too comfortable and too enthusiastic about feeling good about the direction. Find a way to take it down a notch.
I used to notice this as a kid skiing, and I was noticing, why are my thighs on fire? But just the fronts of them. Like, it wasn't the whole muscle, it was just the front. And I realized I'm leaning back in my skis. And then I realize, oh, I'm leaning back on my skis every time I start to pick up speed and it feels really good. Something about that scared me, which kind of makes sense as you're, like, zooming down a mountain, like, I could crash. But I don't think I was afraid of the danger of it. I think I was also afraid of, this feels really good. And I'm not sure what to do with, like, the wave of sensation that goes with a good feeling either.
Mm-hmm. We've been taught, conditioned not to trust our emotional experience.
Yes.
Right? Because we don't trust how we convey ourselves to the world, how we present. And so, of course, there's got to be an upper limit, because how could it possibly feel good for an extended period of time, my place in the world?
Yeah. We can think about affect tolerance in a way as like, well, you could think about it a little bit like wading into an ocean with a much younger child, let's say, right? And a toddler, as a wave comes, could easily get swept right off his or her feet. And an adult for that same wave would be able to hold his or her ground in the sand. Like the feet might brace a little bit and that wave comes through and you feel it for sure, but it doesn't absolutely wash you away. The same's true of big feelings. Like they really can overtake the nervous system. And if you've heard the phrase limbic hijacking, you know, the limbic system is fully formed at 4 years old. And it's where, you know, all the emotional stuff is happening in the center of the brain. And this forebrain, you know, our frontal lobe, when the limbic system is really hijacked, literally allows blood to flow from the front of the brain to the center of the brain. And we, as I was just talking with Doug Herr about this briefly this morning, and he was like, it's amazing. With big, huge feelings, we literally get dumber.
Yeah.
And what that really means is we just have a whole lot less blood supply to the thinking, judging, you know, choosing, discerning part of our mind. And so there's a reason we're a little bit scared about being overwhelmed by a whole lot of feelings. And it starts with that one, is like, we don't want to get swept off our feet. And it takes some skill and some maturity and a sense of self to stay present even when the feelings start to get big. Doug had a nice way of talking about this morning. He was like, you know, the thing about a really big feeling is it excites both the desire and the terror of wholesale change. Like when we're feeling something really big, there's this fear on the, especially on the negative side, and kind of this fantasy on the positive side that if, let's say, Pete, you were to step fully into everything you could be in the public eye and all of your talents are on full display and you're at your very best, there's this fantasy, but I think also this simultaneous terror that everything would be different.
I mean, I would first of all vomit and then I would just burn up into ash. I would just...
You would incinerate. Complete incineration on the spot.
I don't know who this guy is you're talking about.
That's right. And so what I was starting to get at with the ADHD thing, as I've been thinking about it, is I think there's something really important about the chronic shame that stays with people who live with ADHD. And some of it is about, I think, how the both and brain can work. Some of it also is about how different we can be as we move through the world, especially when we're little. Gabor Mate puts this really beautifully when he says, we're born with these two fundamental needs that stay with us our whole lives. And the two needs are for attachment and authenticity. We have to bond to other humans and stay bonded to other humans all our lives. And we have to be able to be in touch with ourselves and be our true selves to lead a productive, healthy, happy life. Mm-hmm. No problem. Unless you grow up in a family or a culture or a whole series of classrooms where you can't be your authentic self and maintain a bonded connection to people you depend on for survival.
Well, right, because you're masking, right? So especially I see this with women, is we're masking the symptoms because we want to fit in with everyone else. And we don't want to look like we're not fitting in or that something's wrong. And men do it too. And so that's where the authenticity just goes out the window, because now we're pretending like we're something that we're not.
Right. The weirdest thing about those two twin needs is the wise priority begins to change somewhere midlife, right? So you have to, in childhood, prioritize attachment over authenticity because you can't survive by yourself. Right. Human beings of all the species are the most helpless for the longest time. So that's a really good thing. But there comes a time where if we can't be authentic, the very attachment we most want is impossible because we're not loved for who we actually are. Now we're loved for some performance we're putting on, and we know it. And this really matters a lot because authenticity depends on us being connected to our internal selves in our bodies and connected to that self. And that's where all those feelings show up. And there's, I think, a really strong impulse learned really early for everybody, but especially people who grow up in households where attachment's really strained or traumatizing, or where maybe their brains are built just a little differently and all of it's a little harder, especially if parents don't know what to do and you don't have wonderful classrooms and schools that totally get it. And they're like, hey, you're just built differently. We got a manual for that. We'll just help you learn what to do. Most of us weren't so lucky. We grew up trying to fit something. And then I think it gets really scary later to say, I'm going to step out of this shadow career that is an approximation of like what I want to be and into the real me. Like now I'm going to like risk it all.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk about that switch, right? Because that's the switch that we have to like come to in with some intention. You know, if you see yourself kind of, you know, mirroring some of the things that you're describing here, right? Now that I know that this is what I am, I guess that the switch is flipped. Awareness is everything. And I can forgive my parents and move on with my life. Is that, I mean,
if it was only so easy.
Hyperbolically, like, how do you get to the other side of it?
It is a process, right? And I think a lot of it is a process of growing our capacity and willingness to have feelings that we find at first overwhelming. You know, some of them are the negative ones, right? Like, how do I begin to realize I don't always have the effect on other people I want to have? And I am different. And that's okay in a way, but not okay with everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. And I got to have some hard feelings about that. And I think there is a giftedness that goes with ADHD that I don't think we even fully understand yet. I really believe this. And I know it annoys people to death sometimes when that gets said, because I don't want to make it sound like it's always easy. But there is something extraordinary about a both and brain that creates potential that is quite remarkable. You can know things before you've but that you shouldn't yet know. There is really strong intuition. There is extraordinary creativity. We're often putting together things an either or brain wouldn't normally put together. And it's beautiful. But I think for the ADHD jump from who I am to who I could be can feel like quite a cavern to leap. You know, it's an Evel Knievel sort of jump, because what's possible doesn't seem within reach. And then there's this shame you take with you too, where you're like,
right,
who am I kidding? Could I ever really be that?
Evel Knievel, who doesn't even know he's allowed to attempt a jump, and he's carrying a U-Haul behind a motorcycle. Like you're stacking up the roadblocks behind seeing that in yourself.
And often the building the bridge from one side to the other side does take a whole lot of It takes a lot of work, a lot of infrastructure, a lot of like building of things that take steady progress. And I think often just takes help because it usually is leaning on what ADHD is not best for.
Well, and it's so subtle too. So I think that like with ADHDers, it's so easy to miss when it's such a subtle change. I in the work that I've done with clients, I see it in one instance where somebody will come to the group and say, I didn't beat myself up over not getting this thing done. And that's so subtle and such a win. And it's getting closer to being more authentic, but they don't necessarily see it, because then the next sentence is, but I still, or whatever, right? It's like they acknowledge it for a split second, and then it turns so quickly. So I think that the help is also somebody identifying and hearing that for them and sitting in that moment, you know, like, wait, this is that subtle change that's happening.
You know, this is what you're saying actually really I don't know. This is maybe obvious, but I feel like coming at any experience of emotion and talking about the thing that I didn't beat myself up for doing is different. And I think important to note that with affect tolerance, we're talking about who I am, right? Not what I do. It's like the next level beyond what I do, because I already know how to feel shame for what I do and don't do, right? I've been trained that all along. But what my eyes are, what I'm kind of opening to here is that affect tolerance describes the next level of, you know, climbing over the mountain of shame for how I exist, right? Yeah. For the constant feeling of, you know, seeking exuberance in social situations and fear that I cannot live up to it. Yeah. It is like, and that's more than behavior. It's more than an activity that I know, or a schedule that I'm not able to keep very well, or the alarms that I have to set just to live my life. It's the deeper part of, I don't know how to share. Like when you go back to authenticity, I don't know how to share who I am in a way that doesn't feel completely foreign. Like Nikki, you brought up masking. Like everything is a mask.
Well, I mean, the deep, deep fear that lives in all of us, especially those who carry some shame, is that if I become the real me, I'll lose everyone. Little kids and the most elderly will tell you nothing else matters but the everyone. It's the relationships that matter the very most. And deep down, we know that, right? And there's this fear, like, if I go to where I gotta go, like, you know, James Clear in his book, Atomic Habits, talks about this idea that, like, you can build a habit, but the only way to fully sustain it is to become the person who would do that regularly.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
A non-author can keep on writing kind of for a while, and maybe through sheer force of will can do it for a long time. But until they see themselves as an author, they're never going to do it intrinsically. It's always going to be extrinsic, right? And that's not maintainable.
Oh, that's so, wait a minute. That's so good. You got to say it again, right? Because that is exactly describes what I was getting at, the difference between the activity and the identity.
Right. Until the identity shifts, the activity is all extrinsic and it's pure will. Yeah. But like until it feels like willingness, there's no real power in it. It's just force.
Yeah.
And I work with this with clients all the time. Like it is, it's one of the most fascinating subjects in the world to me. It's what the Taoists would call wei wu wei. It's doing without doing. Alan Watts has this great video clip somewhere on YouTube about wei wu wei, where he's like, you know, I've been thinking about this for years and I finally figured out the analogy. It's like moving from rowing to sailing. Rowing being this experience of like arduous dragging of yourself through the water, looking over your shoulder the whole time, everything being this like it's fully dependent on your effort. And sailing is where like you attach to what naturally wants to happen anyway, this invisible force that's blowing your direction anyway. And for the first time, you raise a sail to catch some of that energy and you just begin to steer. You're just willing to go that direction and it's steering instead of dragging yourself through the water, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think all of us, but I want to say especially the neurodivergent, are often dragging themselves through their lives, trying and trying and trying to make themselves do a thing, often because it's who they think they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Or who everybody wants them to be. And then some of the time also because it's just part of what's functional in this culture. Like we do have to will ourselves to pay our bills and, you know, do some boring shit. But there's this deep change that happens when you realize like inside me is a real me that is a wind blowing in another direction. And if I can align with that truest self, I get to go that direction without so much effort. Some of that's practice and you get kind of in habits and you begin to see yourself that way. But all of this still depends on like a certain amount of tolerance to feel that good.
Like we have brakes that work far better than the accelerator.
Ironically, right?
Yeah.
Like for all the talk of impulsivity, I think ADHD is, you know, there is a deep emergency brake that's been pulled somewhere there, you know, that often holds us in place and keeps us from going to the very place where we would succeed the most. Or we leap that direction really impulsively and without enough support, without some help to get us there, right? We'll have an idea of like, I'm going to do this thing, but we haven't really embodied it more deeply. We're going to, it's so like, I'll talk about this more personally, where this is showing up for me. And, you know, it doesn't escape me that I'm here talking about this because like sometimes we have to teach the thing we most need to learn. Yeah. I have this incredibly blessed professional life where I get to do the very thing all day long that turns my brain on. It took me the longest time to realize, oh shit, I have ADHD, because I lucked into, once I escaped the excruciating process of going through school with a brain belt like mine, I get to be with people all day, and people are the most fascinating freaking thing in the whole world to me. I love people. And I love my clients. And one hour after another, I'm honored by this person who would bring me this precious material. And we get to talk about it together and watch their lives become this amazing thing. And it's so beautiful that I can forget sometimes that I really have to write a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really want to have written the book, but I do not want to write the book.
Right.
And I think most of the time, if I'm honest about it, my fear is, oh gosh, what if I write the book and nobody likes it? I'm not sure that's really my worst fear.
Yeah.
I think I'm worried everyone will like it.
Wow.
I think I'm afraid it will work.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little afraid I'm going to like step into the rest of who I'm supposed to be, even though I'll always want to be seeing clients because I love that. I think there is more I got to do. And it scares me.
Yeah.
Who am I to think I can write a book? Who am I to like go teach this stuff I got to teach? Yeah. Part of my brain can say, well, duh.
Yeah.
You know, you've earned it. But there's a little kid part of me that's like, if I become the real me, I'm going to lose everybody.
And you don't know how to be that person. You know how to be the person right now.
Yeah. It's part of me.
It's part of you.
It's not the guy I'm growing into being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
It's a snake shedding its skin, right? Like there's something under there.
Yeah. 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 What will that be like?
Can you just reflect a little bit on negative affect tolerance? Because I see this like for everything when I talk about, because I spend all day looking at sound waves, I look at this as like gain versus compression, right? Positive affect tolerance is compression. We're taking the highs and bringing them back down so that they don't burn too brightly, right? And on the bottom end, it's gain. It's like there is sound down there and we need to make it louder. What are we running from? Or what is our toleration for the negative experience that maybe the thing I'm reflecting specifically on is how comfortable am I in discomfort? Is my negative affect tolerance too good?
Yeah.
That I'm okay sitting in a space which is not my authentic self. Is that a fair kind of correlation?
I would change it a little bit. I think it's a little bit more like, let's come back to your point, because you actually, you separately brought up a really, really cool topic too. I think you'd think of positive affect tolerance is like, how much can I stand the highs, the treble?
Mm-hmm.
Negative affect tolerance is how much can I stand the lows, the bass, you know, and compression mm-hmm. is squeezing both of those together, you know, right? Mm-hmm. But you could also be just dampening the high notes, or you could be just killing all your
gating the low notes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And when we go running away from feelings, negative, you know, affect, let's say intolerance, when we aren't willing to feel difficult feelings, it turns into all the things we do to stop feeling bad. Like if I'm willing to realize, let's say maybe I feel a loss coming and I am feeling sad about what's going to change in my life when that loss comes. If I can sit still for that in a way, it metabolizes and moves through me. And if I can't, I then begin to do everything else but that. I go into my head and I think, or I could go get a drink or smoke marijuana or get some substance that makes me feel something else, or I could drink way too much coffee, or I could get into Netflix, or I could get into obsessive running, or anything else I could do. And generally speaking, you know, if we take our if we avoid our pain in those ways, wherever we go with it, we make those painful. Instead of running for good exercise, I'll run until it hurts me.
Right.
If I'm avoiding feelings with it, right?
Or I haven't run in a while, so I'll run, I'll go out and try and run 5 miles until I break something.
Yeah, right. Like we'll do some version of like, we'll just bring our torment somewhere else. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, really our two seasons of the change paradox were almost entirely about that paradoxical reality that the more we go toward the thing we think we can't stand, the less overwhelming it becomes.
Right.
And paradoxically, it allows it to change. You know, if there's a best example of that, in a concrete way, when I'm really tired, there's a part of me that wants to reach for coffee and hijack my brain. Or I want to do something. I want to do jumping jacks until like my nervous system has to wake up. But the very best thing I could do would be to go take a 20-minute nap, to go toward my fatigue.
Right.
Let myself go where I really need to go, sleep for a little bit, and then the whole afternoon would be far better than me being exhausted but jacked up on coffee.
You said I said something cool, and I can't let the podcast go without shining a light on that because it happens kind of infrequently.
So no, not true.
Not.
So not true.
So not true. You were talking about...
It was like my level of tolerance of living in authentic or negative space.
Now that is a really freaking interesting subject right there. Okay, here's what's interesting about it. There is a healthy form of negative affect tolerance, right? Where we are letting ourselves have the feelings we want to have. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is a not so healthy version, where we've gotten so used to feeling miserable that we don't feel it anymore.
Yes, that's it.
Which is actually, in a really subtle way, a low negative affect tolerance. We're not letting ourselves have the feeling. We've just gotten super good at numbing.
Yeah.
And so we can stay in a place where we are frustrated in a relationship that's not working, or a career that's like only half of what it needs to be, wants to be, or any number of other situations where we've just learned to kind of grit it out by going somewhere else in our heads or whatever we do.
It's the Joe versus the volcano syndrome.
Help me with that. I haven't seen that.
Okay. Joe versus the volcano. Fantastic movie with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. And he is stuck in the worst negative affect tolerance. He feels terrible. He hates his job. He's always sick. And then they tell him he has a brain cloud, and that shakes him out of his, that's like the jarring event. And he goes to sack, he's going to die. There was nothing wrong with him, but then he gets this diagnosis. He's going to die. So he goes to throw himself into a volcano and sacrifice himself to the god of this crazy island. The point is, Joe versus the volcano, Joe Banks is like a role model for negative affect tolerance. Somebody out there in the Discord is going to get that metaphor.
Somebody way sharper than I am understands throwing yourself in a volcano.
Homework. You have to go watch Joe versus the volcano.
Apparently I do. And I just need to apologize publicly to everyone that I haven't seen this movie. Because
I haven't either.
Nikki, what?
You guys.
We're terrible.
Oh, ADHD movie club. We're going to have to do something. My goodness.
Gotta fix that.
Anyhow.
For sure.
So this is that's the whole thing that connects with me.
It's the whole thing. I think this deepest piece that I'm freaking fascinated by, though, is like do we dare become the rest of ourselves? You know?
Yeah.
Do we dare?
Right. Because what do we do with this awareness now? Like what do we do?
Yeah, now what?
How do we make it a practice, right, to start stretching these muscles?
Let me say quickly that the negative affect tolerance part is like it's a practice of like, can I stay in my body for a minute and not do something about this? Mm. And can I trust that really a feeling, if you stay in your body and don't go into your head, and this would be great to go hear Jerry Campbell's talk from our show where we interview him. He explains that very well. Like if you can just stay in your body, that feeling rarely lasts more than 10 or 15 minutes. You might cry a little bit. You think you're going to cry all day, maybe for the rest of your life. And it doesn't really. So you got to trust your body a little bit. But the bigger, much more mysterious one, I think, is how do we start tolerating an idea that I might be meant for more? Like, maybe I have to grow now and I'm going to have to risk something. And then we're like, then we're carrying both because there will be disappointments. And it's not going to change your whole life. As Doug said on the phone, he said, the interesting thing is we're all like both wishing and terrified that a big, huge feeling will change everything. If I go become this writer and I publish this book, maybe everything will be different. And part of me is terrified of that, even if I am fantasizing that, you know, people will be ogling my new abs that arrived because I have written a book. Like I will be this beach god, I think. No, I mean, well, like whatever, like wherever you go in your head for like, this is the new life, you know, this is perfect. It's not that. It isn't that. And maybe very likely not that many people are going to buy this book, but I will have stepped into a willingness to like finally be an actual author like you guys are.
Well, and share the value of it, like to become unafraid of sharing the value that you've collected all these years, right? All the wisdom that you have collected and processed and recognize that there's value in that and not have it tied to the voice in the back of your head that says you're not allowed to feel good things.
Yeah.
Like those two things should be separated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways to practice that is to like, is to in small ways and in huge ways, sit down and practice in our minds being where we want to be. It can be manifesting. It can be also just as simple as like, I want to take on this new habit of writing every day, because that's a part of how you get to be a writer is you have to be a writer, right? And I might sit down and like, imagine I've written again. And there is another week of writing when I said I would write. And some of it was easy and some of it was hard, and that's all fine. And I'm doing it and I'm still doing it and I'm doing it again. And I have not lost everyone. Mm-hmm. I haven't lost myself. And it feels good. And that right there, even if you do that for one single time, like, I am going to start studying for this test the day before, you know, 2 days before instead of 1 day before. If you sit down and you imagine that vividly enough, your chances of doing it when you say you're going to do it are way higher.
Because you're becoming that person. Going back to what you said earlier, you're becoming that person. Interesting.
But to become that person, even if it's for one single event, let alone a whole identity shift, is to see it and hear it and feel it as vividly as you can. Mm-hmm. And notice not just the easy, wonderful things that come up with that, but the resistance we have to all of the good feelings that come with that. Like I was working with this at one point. You guys know I use this technique called the grace sequence, and it's a really cool way to work with something like that, because I can go and one way I worked with it was to go visit myself in my 80s. Cracking the very first book I wrote and reading it for the first time in a long time. And as I was reading through it, thinking, man, this was a really good book. I am so proud of myself for letting myself do this, right? And then what I did was to notice, what does that feel like in my body? Part of me felt warm and good, and another part of me felt scared. And then I went toward the part that felt scared. And instead of like trying to chase it away, I tried to bring it some kindness and affection and work with the grace sequence a little bit to process that through. And then notice, now what am I noticing, right? And I got to a place where I was neither feeling some crazy elation of, oh my God, I'm this author, or this terror of it never worked, or I was terrible, or I wasn't enough, or nobody liked me. But instead, this kind of easy joy of I was a sincere self. I took a risk I can feel proud of, and I'm glad I did. And I'm enough, you know?
Lovely, Dodge. And I also know that we have snuck in on your lunch hour and that you have to go back to see clients. And so we have to wrap it up. But my goodness, I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a huge topic.
It's a huge, huge topic. What do you think about, where would you want to point folks to learn more about some of the things we've been talking about?
It's, you know, it's funny, like there, it's hard to point to, honestly. Like, I want to
point to the book you haven't written yet.
Exactly. That's completely it. Like, it drives me crazy because, like, I want to say, here, go download. Oh, no, don't do that because I don't have that up yet.
Wait, but we can have you come back.
Yeah.
We can have you come back and have more conversation around it.
I will. It's going to happen. And we're going to talk about it when it does because I think it's wonderfully useful for this kind of work.
Yeah. In the meantime, and I will tell you, we're going to put the link, and Melissa already put it in the chat room, the link between the dynamic tension between love and fear, the conversation you hosted with Jerry Campbell from the Change Paradox podcast, which we'll put in the show notes. It is still, I mean, such a valuable listen, and
it's a cool worth. One.
Yeah, it's a really, really good one.
Yep.
So same check out that podcast.
William Martin, I think we talked about Wei Wuwei. He's the Taoist author. There'd be some great stuff there. Manifesting, especially if it doesn't get into too much of the hokey stuff of like just material gain.
Yeah.
If it's rooted more in the like becoming someone of value instead of just someone of success, that stuff can be really great.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
That's a really good quote. I think, it's a great way to look at the difference there. For sure.
Yeah. I'm going to put the third episode. So we've got two episodes already in the can for the show notes, but the third one is the set of the Trance of Scarcity episodes,
which were
very powerful on that vein. So there are a couple of things to follow up and listen to for those who are interested.
There's one more, Pete, and that would be the one with Dave Rico on the five things, right? Like the five things we cannot change is really entirely about like, can I tolerate that I'm not in control of everything, that people are not loving and loyal all the time, that things don't always go according to plan? Because like as we build tolerance for all five of those, like life becomes a lot more doable. Yeah.
So really in the show notes, we want you to just go listen to all the episodes of The Change Paradox because they're all great.
That's all it's going to be. Just some quick homework on that one.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Dr. Dodge for hanging out, for coming back. And I think we only have one more and you will be officially a Hall of Fame guest.
Oh, how exciting.
The ADHD podcast. And you'll get a smoking jacket of some sort.
I think
there is something that comes with it. Some sort of valuable prize. Dr. Dodge, we sure appreciate you. And we appreciate you, everybody else who's out there listening, whether you're in the live stream listening to us and commenting along in Discord, or if you're listening at home, in your car, wherever you are, we sure appreciate you. Thank you for your time and your attention.
Don't forget,
if you have something to contribute,
I'm sorry, I totally was interrupting your spiel. My bad. I just wanted to say thank you for this amazing show. I didn't want you to stop before I got a chance to say I love this show. I love your connection. I love the approach you guys take from both sides of this subject. It's a real gift to the world.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dodge.
So kind.
I didn't expect it. Like, you, I mean, we're old friends, and sometimes I don't know when to expect sincerity or when you're just going to bust my chops. That was really...
that was sincere.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was really nice.
And now he has to go so that he's not late.
Yes. If he is late, it's his fault at this point. So at least we know where that
goes. You were mid-spiel. I interrupted.
I was mid-spiel. Anyway, continuing the spiel, heading over to the Show Talk channel in the Discord server, and you can be over there with us at the deluxe level or better. On behalf of Nikki Kinzer and Dr. Dodge Ray, I'm Pete Wright, and we will see you right back here next week on Taking Control, the ADHD podcast.